The madness has officially begun, and it's time for you to shoot your shot and score big on the nonstop action with MyBookie. It doesn't matter whether you're filling out multiple brackets, betting the national championship winner, or simply looking for player and game props, MyBookie has you covered. Sign up today at MyBookie and use the promo code TASKMASTER to secure a first deposit bonus up to $1,000. It's simple, folks. Put in $200 and play with $300. Just use the promo code TASKMASTER and claim your bonus. College ball, NBA, and UFC, no matter the sport, no matter the minute, MyBookie puts the action in your hands with in-game live betting. And with the choice from thousands of lines and odds, you can turn any game day into payday. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Just don't forget to use that promo code TASKMASTER. Remember, you can bet anything, you can bet anytime, you can bet anywhere with MyBookie. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I am your host, GP John Paz. And of course, with me, the star of the show, former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the man behind the 83 Weeks of Dominance and the NWO, the Taskmaster, the Games Master, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. JP, how are you, my friend?
Doing very good. And I noticed this, and hopefully you noticed this as well, that you and J.J. Dillon are still draws after all these years. 3.5 million people tuned in to the Judge Steve Harvey show to see you guys duke it out in court over $7,500 for the boat. But, man, you guys outdrew Raw, SmackDown, both AEW shows. I mean, add them all up together, you probably outdrew them. What a great draw you guys were for the show.
Well, Steve Harvey's the star, so I think J.J. and I might have gave it a little boost, but he's the star, and he's very, very personable, huge wrestling fan. He has to take pictures with us afterwards. He was great.
I love that it was so well received. I know so many people were shocked that after all these years, you guys are still, not arguing, but there's still some tension between the Taskmaster and JJ. I love it, but Steve Harvey, definitely a big wrestling fan.
Yeah, he was. Is. And he was very, very personable. He was excellent.
And I know you can't get into too much, obviously, because of the legalities of all the things, but I just thought that was amazing to see you guys out there and just to see the reaction it got from the public. I mean, everybody was talking about it. It was great.
Yeah, it was. It was. And we got some movement on Linda's book, Old School. We got some people want to look at it, maybe make a screenplay out of it. Who knows? So wow. We're really, you can still get the book on Amazon. So it's doing well.
So Old School, yeah. Great stuff. L.A. Yeah. Taylor.
Yeah. It's, she really worked hard at it. She did an amazing job. She just listened to my rants and turned it into something. And she worked her ass off for 4 years on that book.
I love the book, and obviously I love Steve Harvey. Yeah, I love that he's taking pictures with you guys. But is everything okay with you and JJ? It's all good now.
All good.
Nice.
All good.
Nice. Love it. How long have you known JJ? 40 years? Maybe longer?
I met JJ the first time. I went to Amarillo from Florida. You know, we used to send guys back and forth. And I wrestled Terry that day, which was an experience every time. But that was in 1973, I met him. So we're going on 50 years.
Oh, 50.
When
yeah,
I saw JJ, he was, he never gets the credit he deserves as a wrestler. He was the top heel there at the time, besides Terry being a babyface there and a heel in Florida. But I think JJ went from Amarillo to Florida. And then the rest is history, you know, for him. He's had a stellar career.
I feel like one of these days we'll have to get into a little bit further story about this boat, like when we can, obviously. But I do think it's crazy. People forget he's had 5,000 plus matches. Everyone always thinks he was a manager.
No, I mean, then he went up to the Maritimes and was their champion, and he was doing great business until the company lost their TV. There was two companies there. Again, I was talking about how many territories there were when I was first broke into business. And when JJ went up there, he worked for the K's, and Emil Dupree was running too. So they would drop big in the summer, you know what I mean? Because they played the K's all winter. And then he'd bring in guys, and they did the K's, and Emil did the same thing. So a little place like that supported two wrestling companies.
Pretty amazing, though, that people only kind of remember, not only remember him, but they always, like, when they think of J.D. Dillon, they always think of the Four Horsemen, or maybe right. His time at WCW. That's what they think of. They almost forget that he wrestled for so long. I just always surprises me when I hear that people are like, oh, he wrestled too? Like, even Bobby the Brain, like, yeah, they were first wrestlers, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you a funny thing. I saw JJ when I was a kid. He was in the third, he refereed the third match between Kowalski and Bruno in Boston Gardens. It was the third match. And that's all, you know, you got with Bruno, usually. But they brought JJ in to be a referee. And a chair got in the ring, and Kowalski picked it up and threw it at Bruno. Bruno ducked, hit JJ in the head. He was bleeding, knocked out, and then they came back a month later. And I think it's the last time they ever had wrestling at Fenway Park, and they drew about 30,000 people. The Sheik was on the card with Bulldog Brower, who I never met, and they were in a cage, and they had a stellar card. 30,000 people, and they raised the ticket prices. So I think Kowalski was there. Only guy that ever wrestled Bruno four times in a row.
Pretty good. Pretty legendary feud.
Yeah, Kowalski was over huge in Boston because he was back in the 50s when Paul Bowers owned the territory. He was, Bowser was, even though he was in the NWA, remember, he had his, they gave him a special dispensation. He had his own world heavyweight champion, and that was Kowalski. So Kowalski is over big.
When Bruno, like, initially came into WWF, obviously before he was champ, he had a bit of a Goldberg-like undefeated streak. And I believe it ended at, like, 129 or 130. And I think Kowalski was the one that ended it, right? Wasn't that the whole thing? He had his own streak?
Yeah, and, you know, he had Bruno had, before he was champion, had lifted Haystack Calhoun up and dumped him. There's still some pictures of him doing that floating around. So Bruno was over and he wrestled Baba. And when Baba came to the States, and that's how they became friends. And Bruno used to book for Baba.
Oh, I didn't know that part. Interesting. So he was like the guy Jin helping him out, like Carly Race would eventually become with like Pro Wrestling Noah and stuff.
You want to hear something strange?
Yes.
He booked for Baba. Vince booked for Inoki. At the same time.
Wow. Weird.
Yeah.
Huh, that is weird. Like splitting the babies there with with Japan. Yeah. Wow, look at that. Interesting stuff there in wrestling history. And today, on today's episode, we're going to go a little bit into wrestling history. We're going to go all the way back to 1989. Clash of the Champions 6 took place on April 2nd, 1989, from the Louisiana Superdome in New Orleans, Louisiana. There was 5,300 people in attendance. The show drew a 4.3, and of course that was on TBS. The show was used as the build-up for WrestleWar 89 on May 7th, which was also headlined by Ricky the Dragon Steamboat versus the Nature Boy or Ric Flair for the world title. Clash 6 was also held on the same day as WrestleMania 5. This is free TV, obviously, and WrestleMania 5 is on pay-per-view, but still, probably would have got it bigger than a 4.3 rating, but WrestleMania is on that same day, getting 750,000 buys. So, pretty remarkable. Hogan and Savage that night tore it up. And hey, maybe they would have even got more pay-per-views if you guys didn't run Clash that night. People weren't watching Clash.
Right, and I think that was the plan. I think that was the plan to take away from WrestleMania.
Obviously, you know, Survivor Series was used in 87 to take away from Starrcade 87 and, like, you know, to try to hurt NWA. NWA the next year with Clash of the Champions was on the same day as WrestleMania 4. And then here, when you have WrestleMania 5, you guys do Clash again. Very much a lot of competition back and forth. A lot of, you know, you swipe here, we'll swipe back kind of thing, right?
Right, absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you think that this rating definitely hurt WrestleMania? Because on the surface, it seems like it did.
Well, with 750,000 buys, I don't know how much we hurt them, but we hurt them a little, that's for sure.
Hey, 4.3, basically 4 million people watching. It's a pretty damn good rating, and I think obviously nowadays they'd kill for that. You know, this is not you and JJ on Steve Harvey here, but you know, it's still 4 million. I mean, they're pretty damn good. You know, they would kill for that today.
Yeah, when you say 4 million, that was 4 million homes in those days. I don't know what it is now, but I'm going to say it's similar. They figured it was 2.2 people watching in every household. I actually think it was might have been more, but anyway.
So with this show, obviously the main event is Ricky Steamboat versus Ric Flair, 2 out of 3 falls for the NWA World Heavyweight title. And obviously WrestleWar, we're going to have the rematch after this. But this feud in and of itself, Steamboat versus Flair, to me, the greatest wrestling feud ever, the best matches ever. This is one of my favorite feuds. Did you agree? Like, do you think Flair Steamboat maybe best chemistry?
Yeah, but I don't think it was the best feud. I think the best feud was Austin and McMahon.
How about in the ring, wrestling wise?
Oh, wrestling wise, yeah, without a doubt.
When you look at the, you know, on paper, it's like Flair Steamboat, one guy, kind of this rich guy with all the ladies. Steamboat, it seems like this clean-cut family guy. It's funny, though, because sometimes Flair would get cheered, and not Steamboat get booed, but, you know, Flair would get cheered because he was such a cool heel. But if you look at it, ultimate heel versus the ultimate babyface, to me, you know what I mean? Steamboat's such a baby, and
yeah.
Rick is such a heel.
I think you're absolutely right for that one.
When you look at what's going on here and the build-up, obviously it's like Hogan versus Savage and WWF is killing it. But still, Flair versus Steamboat is just, I mean, people are still talking about it today. It's one of the greatest feuds ever. But a lot of interest was in this feud and on this show. What is your role at this point? Because I think there's a bit of a committee going on.
Yeah, Rick was the head of the committee. And I was very close to Rick. And I gave him a lot of ideas for finishes during that time. Especially with the Terry Funk, when Terry got involved.
With that, that's great too, because you're going to go from Flair Steamboat to Flair Funk. I mean, and then, I mean, that's a different story for a different day, but that was just awesome. Like, to head in that direction, to go from one awesome feud to another, and one is like a blood feud while the other one was like pure wrestling. I mean, it was great. Who else is like in the committee? So it's you, it's Rick, it's Jim Cornette.
Right. Eddie Gilbert, I believe, was there at that time, wasn't he? Or was he still in UWF?
I think he was there at this time, in 89. Yeah, yeah, he was.
He was on the committee.
Jim Ross?
Jim Ross. And I think people were coming in and out, too. I can't remember who else would pop in occasionally, but Robert Fuller was involved for a while. Robert got a great mind. But I think it was basically me, Cornette, Gilbert, Ross, and Rick. Jimmy was cutting his teeth then, and to booking, and he took to it like a duck takes the water.
So obviously with Jim Herd in charge, there is some problems with Cornette and him, right?
And Cornette, I mean, and Herd with Flair. I think Herd with Eddie. And, you know, the famous line when he came in and wanted Rick to be Spartacus. Cut his hair, put an earring in his ear, and have him have a harpoon coming to the ring. So when he said that, I said, well, if we're going to do that, why don't we go to Yankee Stadium and change Babe Ruth's number from 3 to 412? Didn't get over too well with her, but everybody else popped.
That is great. It just makes no sense. Looking back, how does that make any sense?
Here's something. They were trying to get rid of Rick since at least 1989, and he's still relevant, hugely relevant still today.
He is the best.
He's like Keith Richards. You can't get rid of Rick.
Yep. Very true. And it's just so interesting because, like, what does Ike Herd know about wrestling? You know what I mean? Like, to do that and have those ideas and the ding-dongs and Spartacus. Like, what was his background in wrestling? Nothing, right?
Well, here's how he got the job. He had been the general manager of the TV station in St. Louis that carried wrestling. So when that job needed to be fulfilled, Jack Petrick, who was the head of WCW, and not just WCW, Turner Entertainment, he figured this guy knew something because of the ratings they were drawing in St. Louis. Little did he know that Jim didn't know anything about wrestling.
Wow, I didn't realize that he, you know, didn't really have a background, but at least, you know, he was running the St. Louis station, so... Man,
and then the other one that he didn't get by us was the Hunchbacks. He wanted the Hunchbacks, and they couldn't get pinned. So I said to him, that's a great idea. Have I told you this?
No.
I said, that's a great idea, Jim, but I got the way to get them beat. He said, you can't. I said, yeah, let's put them against the Rock and Roll Express and go to... the baseball field that Turner owned, that was downtown Atlanta at the time. And I said to him, what we'll do is they'll take a tumble outside the ring, and Ricky Morton will pick up a shovel and dig a hole and put the hump in the hole and cover them, and we'll beat the Hunchbacks. Another one that popped the room. I didn't go over too well with her.
I would imagine not, yeah. You're just kind of, yeah, you got to be giving him a stupid idea after his stupid idea.
Right, right.
Man, it's just the guys that don't understand wrestling. I mean, they really just don't understand it, but don't pretend you do, right? I mean, they're just crazy.
Right, right. Right.
I wonder, though, like, okay, they think that he knows stuff, but he clearly doesn't. Does anybody ever, like, clue Ted in or anybody in, like, hey, this guy doesn't really know what he's doing or what he's talking about?
No, I don't think anybody from that turn aside knew anything about wrestling either, so they thought they had a prize in Jim Herd.
Man, it's the crazy to, like, look back and, you know, you see Cornette and him obviously having some arguments. The Midnight Express not being booked that greatly, it seemed like on purpose. Was there some big-time heat with Jim Herd and Cornette?
Yeah, big time. Jimmy is an outspoken individual, and I think that was where he cut his teeth on standing up to what he thought was right.
Cornette tells a great story. For some reason, our buddy Shane Douglas, supposedly went to Herd and said he didn't want to be jobbing to Cornette. Is that true? Is that story true? Because Cornette tells a great story about that.
If Jimmy says it, it's true. Jimmy's not a bullshitter.
Shane says it, I forget how, but he says it another way, saying that he didn't say that he didn't want a job to Cornette, but he basically expressed that he didn't like the idea of him feuding with Cornette, but he's supposed to be feuding with the Midnight Express. I guess if you're that young, though, and I know Flair has a story about it, too, where he was pissed about it, but I guess if you're that young to the business, you probably shouldn't say anything, right?
Yeah, especially when you go over the booker's head, you know what I mean? But it was because Shane was so young.
He didn't know any better.
Exactly.
So when you look at...
So you gotta give Shane a pass on our corner.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. So when you look at just Herd and Cornette, you could see, like, in the booking that, okay, somebody's not very happy. Is Herd saying to Flair, like, it should, because you know Flair and Cornette like each other, like, is Herd the one kind of pushing for Midnight Express to not be jobbing, but to them to have this lesser of a storyline?
Yeah, absolutely. We all knew how great the Midnight Express was. Herd couldn't tell the difference, you know what I mean?
He didn't know. He didn't know what he doesn't know.
Yeah, exactly. When you don't know, you don't know.
When you look at this show, it's just one of those things where it's like, okay, 5,300 people, 4.3 rating, not bad at all. But then you look at WWF and Hogan and Macho have the biggest storyline or one of the biggest storylines ever. Mega Power Explode. I mean, they're killing it. Are you guys, you know, not disheartened, but are you guys kind of being the, like, ultimate underdogs here? Are you guys upset at all? Like, what's kind of the feeling? Like, hey, we really got to pick this thing up? Or are you thinking, like, oh, man, it's just a juggernaut over there in WWF?
Well, we knew we had to pick it up, but we also knew that the difference was Vince McMahon was raised in the wrestling business. So we're going to try to compete with a guy that's absolutely changed the wrestling business. And, you know, we were doing good in the South, but he was doing great everywhere. Back in those days, they were running three towns a night and sometimes four. Where occasionally we ran two towels. So the other thing is they got better coverage on the TV because on the West Coast, we were 3 hours earlier on a Saturday night. So we were 3:05 where Vince had a tape that was playing at 8 o'clock. So he had the West Coast locked up.
So the first match of the evening, the Samoan SWAT team, Samu and Fatu, managed by Paul E. Dangerously, your old buddy Paul, defeat the Midnight Express, Bobby Eaton, and Stan Lane with Jim Cornette in 20 minutes. So this match gets a lot of time. It's a pretty good match. But to me, it seems like, not that they wouldn't have lost the Samoan SWAT team, but it just seems like maybe Cornette's backstages with her may have led to some losses here, as you know, as they're kind of maybe working their way out.
I don't think it was so much Jimmy. Jimmy made his frustrations known to Herd, but Herd didn't see the ability of Eaton and Lane, which was, and you know, they were the at one time, you could say they were the best tag team in the country. You know what I mean?
Easily.
Or the best tag team that we had.
Easily, yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, Jimmy had every right to speak up.
I was always a big, and I love Condrey, and I know Dennis. I love Dennis, and I love him and Eaton together. But to me, I always loved Eaton and Lane. There was just something a little bit extra with Lane, because Eaton is such a good wrestler, but Lane has that extra added personality. Like, he's got that little charisma, doing that funny little karate stuff. You know, like something about those two together, and obviously with Jimmy in the middle, I think they were probably arguably the greatest tag team of all time. And it's funny. It's like, how does this guy, Mr. Pizza Hut, Jim Herd, how does he not see that? But he didn't.
Exactly. And, you know, this was a very trying time for Jimmy and the Midnight Express. Because like we just said, they might have been the best tag team in the country at this time. Best heel tag team for sure.
Yes, definitely. They were awesome. And it's funny, too, because they just had the original Midnight Express versus the Midnight Express, which is a pretty good storyline and a pretty good feud. Probably could have been better, but you know, Dennis kind of walks out and we got that whole story there. We can get that into that another day, but it's Dennis and Randy Rose managed by Cornette, managed by Heyman, aka Dangerously, right, versus Cornette, Eaton, and Lane, which was cool. This was kind of a continuation as they beat them. The original Midnight Express loses and Eaton and Lane win. And then we get the Samoan SWAT team as Heyman's kind of new feud, as him and Cornette have this big feud. Maybe the only guy that could turn Cornette babyface.
Yeah, I think you're right. The only guy that could turn Jimmy babyface was Paul.
They hated him so much that they cheered Cornette. Kind of crazy looking back.
Yeah, and Paul Jimmy and him worked well together, too. And Jimmy didn't buck being a babyface, which was a smart move.
With Cornette and Heyman, a good little feud there. It's very interesting that they're kind of, you know, putting him in the forefront. Did you see Heyman, like, ready already in 89? Because to me, it's like, man, this guy, like, you know, kind of came out of nowhere. And it's like, wow, this guy, you know, he's really, really kind of far advanced. And he's pretty new to the business at this point.
Well, he came to Florida. Mm-hmm. And I broke him into the business. So he was around some very, Dusty and a lot of smart guys. So Paul took to it like a duck takes the water. He really did, because he came down with a guy we call Tombstone, and the guy had a tombstone on his back painted, and it had Scott Hall's name, rest in peace, Scott. And it said born, and it said expired, and it was a question mark. So every night that they were working, I told Scott, give him a shot during the match, and he would. And Paul didn't. Took it like a man, and after about 3 weeks, I told Scott, lay off. Kid's not going anywhere. So it was, he had his baptism by fire.
And here in 89, he kind of becomes one of the top tier heels as far as right. as far as managers. And you guys had quite a bevy of good managers. Obviously, Cornette is there. Gary Hart is there. Paul Ellering is there. Missy Hyatt. So you guys had a good tier of managers here at this point.
Excellent. Probably the best that I can remember at one time. I mean, Gary Hart was brilliant. Missy was very good. Cornette and Ellering was good. And they didn't step on one another, which was, very good. And they all went out and gave their best every night.
So here we get the Midnight Express losing, Samoa and SWAT team win. Could have been maybe political reasons surrounding that, but I think nobody really would fault it if Samoa and SWAT team won. But it's just funny that there's something else going on behind the scenes with Cornette and even Stan Lane, and it seems like that's kind of boiling or beginning to boil.
Right.
So next up, we got the Great Muta with Gary Hart defeating Stephen Casey in about 8 minutes. This is really kind of just cool because it's the Great Muta. It's 89, so he's really fresh. He's really young. You're really saying, like, wow, who is this guy? Who is this talent from the Orient? Who is this talent from Japan? Absolutely amazing. What do you think about the Great Muta, especially here in 89?
Well, I had him when he first came to the States, and I called him the White Ninja.
Mm-hmm.
Came over. Hiro Matsuda brought him over. So that was it. He had developed into a real draw.
To me, I mean, he's one of those guys, it's like he doesn't even need to cut a promo or speak English, even though I know he can a little bit, but it's like he's one of the very few guys that can do that and be super over to the American crowd no matter what. It's like, wow, that's Great Muta. Like, he just has a presence, a star power to him, and his ability in the ring, he doesn't even need to speak.
Well, he also had Gary as his
boss. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So that was a plus for him, too. And I agree with him 100%, but I think with Gary talking for him, and Gary always had those exotic guys, so he did well for Muta. I think it helped Muta, even though, like you said, his presence was incredible. But with Gary talking from, it added another dimension.
And it totally is like, okay, I want to cheer for this guy, but I hate Gary Hart so much. Like, you got to boo Muta. He's a heel. You know what I mean? Gary Hart played his role perfectly.
Right. Gary was, as time goes on, people don't understand how great Gary was. He was a manager for me and Mark for a while, and it was just terrific to watch him perform.
Love Muta. I love Gary Hart, but Muta at this point, at first it's interesting because obviously he's kind of doing the Great Kabuki gimmick. At first they were saying it was the son of Great Kabuki, then they kind of turned it into the nephew of the Great Kabuki. Was that you guys kind of doing that, or was that maybe, is that New Japan kind of doing that? Like, why the change?
I think because we were doing the spot where we were trying to bring Kabuki in. I loved Kabuki. I thought it was fabulous.
Few things that Muta did that are just super impressive in this match. Obviously, the handspring elbow, which is great. He always has that really smooth and fast backbreaker. And then, of course, kind of a move that you can say he either innovated or just really made popular, but that moonsault off the top. And the way he did it, nobody could do it like that. I mean, he does it almost like, boom, just like that in a flash. Awesome moonsault.
Yeah, he was fabulous. And like you said, he was young and wasn't beat up yet.
Man, what a impressive athlete, and he would go on to have a great year in 89 where he really raised his stock and really made him a gigantic global superstar, but it made him so much more popular in Japan that he had such a good run here in the States.
Right. That's what they used to do, send guys to the States to get over and bring them back. The Japanese press was very instrumental, starting back with Ricky Dozan when Ricky would come to Hawaii and L.A. and Baba later go to New York and Texas. And the Japanese press would send pictures back from Madison Square Garden or the Olympic Auditorium for Ricky Dozan or the Blaisdell Arena in Hawaii. So it helped them to be seen as stars in the U.S.
For sure. Definitely. The next match up, the Junkyard Dog defeats Butch Reed with Hiro Matsuda. Match goes about 10 minutes. Not a great match here. Nothing really to kind of write home about. Nothing too fancy here. It's funny that years before in Mid-South, I mean, these guys completely tore it down. Funny, a few years kind of, I don't know, it takes away a bit. But this was not that great, even though Junkyard Dog and Butch Reed, both huge legends and great talents.
Right, absolutely. And like you said, we were trying to get the most out of what they had left in that area. Because like you said, they blew that place over. And I think it was smart for Rick to put them together.
It's funny, years ago, those two drew so much money in Mid-South. Here, you know, they're kind of like toiling around so far in the mid-card before, obviously, Butch Reed eventually ends up with Ron Simmons and Doom, and they become a legendary tag team. But Junkyard Dog here, not in the best shape. He kind of, you know, wasn't the same JYD either. He was, you know, he's a bit bigger here than normal.
Right.
So,
go ahead.
I was going to say, so the finish was Hiro Matsuda tried to get involved. Reed runs into Matsuda, and Junkyard Dog ends up rolling him up for the pin. So, just an interesting finish there, but it's just interesting to think like, wow, JYD, what a god, and even at WWF, he was so over. But here, still JYD, but just not the same guy we were used to when he was in his prime.
Right. Age catches up with a lot of us.
The next matchup, it's interesting, the way this is shown on TV and even kind of edited on WWE Network for some reason. So there's really 10 matches, two dark matches to end the night, but the show itself only really airs five matches. Actually, let me see here. One, two. So they themselves just air the five matches, I'm sorry, and they cut out three. So very interesting that matches 4, 5, and 6 are edited out. But I'm going to read them anyway, and we're going to go over them. But Bob Orton with Gary Hart defeats Dick Murdoch. Very, very short match. For some reason, it's only 30 seconds, but they cut that out. Obviously, 89, Orton and Murdoch are a little both out of the prime.
Right. And I think that's why we're so short. We're running out of time, too.
And you got to save up some time for Flair Steamboat, which is about to go an hour, so definitely.
Right.
And another match that definitely shouldn't have been cut out, but does, the Varsity Club, Mike Rotundo and Dr. Death, Steve Williams, with you as the manager, defeat the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal, with Paul Ellering. And this was the tag team title match for the NWA Tag Team Championship match. So it's weird that that gets cut out. I mean, that's a biggie, the Varsity Club going over and beating the Road Warriors.
Right. That should have been left in. Because Mike and Doc matched up with Joe and Hawk big time.
And here, the Varsity Club of Rotunda and Williams, when they defeat the Road Warriors, it is really kind of crazy because Teddy Long gets involved. A very controversial finish, very controversial officiating. Teddy Long refuses to count the pinfall for the Road Warriors, but then when Steve Dr. Death Williams does the cradle pin on Hawk, he counts very, very fast, and the Varsity Club gets the win. Obviously, Long would be fired as a referee and then quickly become a manager. Was that your idea? Let's get him to be a manager. Because I know we've talked about this before. You've heard him talk. You've heard him do what he could do. He's got charisma at the yin yang. Was that just like, okay, this would be a great angle to kind of set him up as not even a referee, as now a manager?
Right. Eddie and I both, we used to ride together with Teddy, and we saw what Teddy could, how he could talk. And we knew Teddy would be a big asset as a manager. And he is still to this day.
And you and your boys, the varsity club, got to reap the benefits of his cheating. And obviously, yeah. You don't want to cleanly beat the Road Warriors, right? I mean, you got to cheat to beat them.
No, yeah. And it wasn't just cheating to beat them. It was to get Teddy as a manager. So it worked out perfectly.
The next match, Ranger Ross defeated the Iron Sheik by DQ, and the match goes just about 2 minutes. What are your thoughts on Ranger Ross here?
He was a very good athlete, and he added another dimension. And, you know, you look at it, but you got to remember it's still USA versus Iraq, Iran, Tui. I'm the Iron Sheik, you know, Sheiky baby. So it worked out well.
And he really was an Army Ranger. He really was Ranger Ross.
Yep.
But here in 89, it's funny. WCW is such an interesting, like, you got Bob Orton Jr., Dick Murdoch, Junkyard Dog, and even Iron Sheik. It's such an interesting kind of mishmash. Like, Sheiky baby way out of his prime here.
Right. But, again, it's trying to get the last bit out of a name that you possibly can, and to give Ross a shot in the arm.
The U.S. tag team title belts are up next. Really going to have Eddie Gilbert and Ricky Steiner with Missy Hyatt defeating Dan Spivey and yourself, Kevin Sullivan, in about 4 minutes. Of course, you guys are part of the Varsity Club as well. U.S. tag titles for Ricky Steiner and Eddie Gilbert.
Right. And there was, they should have won. You know, we had those belts for a short period. They had them over. So it was to elevate both Eddie and Steiner.
Now, after the match is over, you guys beat them up, sets up the rematch for the U.S. tag titles at WrestleWar at the pay-per-view. So, interesting, you guys get your heat back at least after the match.
Right. Because we knew where we were going. So it had just made sense to do that.
So with this, interesting, just to kind of side note here before we move on, but the Steiner brothers are in the WWE Hall of Fame, which is very cool. Ricky Steiner and obviously his son, Braun Breaker, I think is inducting them into the Hall of Fame. But the Steiner brothers finally get into the WWE Hall of Fame.
And they should be. And it's cool that his son is going to introduce them to the Hall of Fame. I love that. That's great.
Are you a little nervous with Scott Steiner in an open mic that may not be edited?
No. I think Scott understands the importance of this.
How great would it be if he just was like, you know what, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, all, you know, all the guys he doesn't like, how great would it be if he just opened up on them?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, though.
Man, I remember there was a great Nitro where for some reason he must have had a spat with Flair in the back and he wasn't feuding with Flair and he got suspended for it, but he was ripping Flair a new one, saying that people rather watch Steve Austin. He's an old man making fun of his teeth. I mean, he just, him and Flair, I guess, just didn't get along.
No, they didn't. They didn't. And I think it started when they had that match at Clash of Champions. And, it wasn't, it didn't go as smoothly as you thought it would have. So I can't blame anybody, but going off on Rick didn't make sense. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Because he wasn't working with me. So.
Now for the next match, it is the NWA World Heavyweight Championship match. They keep saying that Sting and Luger also have matches, but this was great because I like this, and it's very true to TV. They're saying, like, TV time remaining, we could have possibly Sting and Luger having a match. So basically, they're saying they don't know how long the match is going to go. We could have more matches, TV time, quote-unquote, remaining, or whatever TV time is left. I like that, I mean, because it kind of tells you as a fan, like, oh, you know, it gives some legitimacy to it.
Right. I think it was very good and well-designed to do that.
Now, when Rick comes out, there's like this little sign in the background, kind of, but with those little lights, and it doesn't spell it R-I-C. It says R-I-C-K, Ric Flair. A little bit of screw up, whoever did the signage screwed up, which
right.
is crazy to think. I mean, the biggest star in the company, but I guess that happens sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes production people aren't the biggest wrestling fans. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That wouldn't happen at this company.
No. And I know sometimes they hire outside people to come in too, right? Like outside production people.
Right.
And but sometimes they might not necessarily know wrestling.
Exactly. That was a huge mistake.
So this is, of course, 2 out of 3 falls, just like the good old days for the NWA world title. Terry Funk joins JR on commentary, kind of foreshadowing a little bit here, you know, like the next feud for Flair. I know it doesn't start here. It starts in about a month at WrestleWar, but just interesting, like, to throw that out there with Funk, because it seemed like, wow, he's still in great shape. Like, a little bit of a tease, right? Setting him up, putting him
right.
on commentary?
Absolutely. Knowing what we're going to do the next month.
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, the champion, of course, defeats Ric Flair 2 out of 3 falls and retains his NWA world title. The match goes about 56 minutes. So the teasing of Sting and Luger is great because who would have thought that the match was going to go 56 minutes? And, man, I know Meltzer gives it 5 stars. I think maybe that might be too low. I love this match. My favorite matches ever. So good. But obviously 5 stars is totally worth it. But amazing match.
Amazing. That's all you can say, but it was amazing. Maybe one of the greatest matches I've ever seen.
When you guys are planning this out and it's going to go 56 minutes, and are you thinking like, okay, this is easily, I mean, are you thinking classic or you don't even think like that?
Oh, we knew it was going to be a classic. We knew.
The first fall, Flair defeats Steamboat after reversing an inside cradle. That first fall goes about 19 minutes and 30 seconds. The second fall, Steamboat forces Flair to submit with the legendary double chicken wing. And that goes in about the 35-minute mark. And then finally, Steamboat pinned Flair after a failed double chicken wing attempt. Flair fell kind of on top of Steamboat, but both men's shoulders were down. Steamboat just got his left shoulder up before the 3, and that fall was just around the 56-minute mark. The replay showed that Flair's foot was under the bottom rope, allowing him to get the rematch at WrestleWar 89. But, man, what a finish. So cool, so well done. Epic stuff.
Yeah, and epic workers to pull it off. They did a magnificent job.
I just love that after the match, Steamboat's like, well, I beat you 2 out of 3. I beat you, you know, in Chicago, Chi-Town Rumble. Flair, you know, great, great feud, but it's over. And then they kind of show you Flair's foot's under the rope. So Steamboat says, you know what? It's not over. I'll give you one last match and you deserve a rematch and I'll give it to you at WrestleWar. So even that was cool. Like he's being like the ultimate babyface.
Right, right. It was done well. It was done well, and like you said, made him the ultimate babyface.
Who booked like the finishes? Is that Flair and Steamboat? Is that you giving some finishes? Who gives the idea for the finishes?
I think we all got together and came up with that one.
pretty good stuff. I mean, just even like every fall really just makes sense and it's perfect.
Well, it's a story that needs to be told and needs to be told well, especially if they're coming back. And going 56 minutes, I think, was the cherry on top of the sundae.
Who do you think's idea was it to go that long?
No, Rick and Ricky.
Very much a throwback to, right? Like old school NWA title matches that are two out of three falls that do go Broadway? Or do you go Absolutely. 60 minutes or close to it?
Absolutely. And people thought it was going to go 60 minutes after we passed the 50-minute mark. So I think it was well done.
Perfect stuff there. I mean, you can't say enough good things about that feud and those matches, but especially this one where you're getting the three falls and you're just getting such a great match with such great chemistry. What was it about those two that they had such good chemistry together?
I think that they respected one another and they had worked together, you know, in Charlotte for so long. It was like, sometimes things look good on paper, but never turn out quite as good to succeed in what you put down. Because they both really liked one another. And they try to make each one of them look better. So there was no animosity. There's no jealousy. They were working for the people.
Rick, obviously, no problem putting anybody over. But, I mean, he has to lose twice. Any sort of issue there or no?
No, that was just not there.
And obviously, you guys have the rematch in your sights. Obviously, WrestleWar was Clash always there to kind of use to promote the pay per view, or what do you think like the end game for Clash was?
To give them a house show feeling on TV, but to lead into where we're going on the pay per views.
And obviously, like we said, WrestleWar 89 comes. Flair and Steamboat have another awesome match, maybe even better than this one, which is insane to think. He definitely equally is good, but it might even be better. It's so damn good at WrestleWar 89. Flair gets the victory. And then, like you said, you're the one who kind of came up with Flair versus Funk.
Yeah. When they was he was a judge. Who better than Terry?
Booking wise, when you're. I'm sorry.
It turned Rick from a heel to a babyface in 10 seconds.
Yeah, literally, yeah. As soon as he puts him through that table, it's like, oh, he's the babyface now.
Yep.
Booking wise, when you're putting that together and you want it to go hot from one awesome feud to another, like, how do you, like, do that booking-wise? Because you don't see that done that often, and you don't see that done that well. I mean, that was just perfect. Like, babyface to heel, or really heel to babyface, boom. And he switched, and he's in another good feud. Like, how do you do that booking-wise?
It was talent that drove that. Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat. You know, you can't lose on that. And knowing Terry is the ultimate heel, and you didn't ever see anybody pile drive a guy through the table until that time, right? Tables were almost non-existent.
Very, very true. Never see that.
Yep.
That's just so cool to me because it's like, wow, what a hot feud with Flair and Steamboat. It's like, oh my God, maybe even hotter with Flair and Funk. You know what I mean? Just crazy to go from one to another, that one extreme to another, and boom, just like that.
Yeah. I got that from Mark, being around Mark. He always knew how to follow a hot feud. Mark was a brilliant guy. being around people that had the experience of doing that is very rare.
For sure. And it's funny, too, because, okay, like, Flair loses to Steamboat here 2 out of 3 falls. Epic stuff, great match. But the night really isn't over because you still have the two dark matches. And Sting, who is the TV champion, he defeats Rip Morgan by submission. And Lex Luger defeats Jack Victory and retains his United States title. So you still do have those matches after, you know, after the taping is over, those really dark matches. But really for the live crowd and really... Because you guys did promote that they would have matches, but TV time remaining, they might be cut off. Just, I know, I like the way it was executed there. Just good booking. Smart.
Well, it was very well done. Everybody threw in their ideas, from Jimmy to Eddie to Jim Ross to Rick to myself. So it worked out very, very well, I thought.
So the network version, the WWE network version, for some reason, like I mentioned, cuts off a bunch of matches. Kind of a little strange that they do that, but you know they do what they do, and we don't really know why. I haven't checked Peacock to see if that's still the same way. Maybe I need to do that. Check to see if Peacock is the same with cutting stuff off. But as far as this show, what would you say? Thumbs up? Thumbs down?
Oh yeah, thumbs up for sure.
I agree. Great stuff. I mean, can't go wrong with Flair and Steamboat. You just can't.
No, you can't.
And I like Midnight Express against SWAT Team. It just go 20 minutes. I mean, so they do give them some time. So there is some other, and obviously great Muda. So there is some other good stuff sprinkled in as well.
Right. I think it was very well done, and it was built up to the main event quite well. We pulled it off and did a pretty good job.
Yes, definitely. So let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com, and go to Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com, and visit the Kevin Sullivan store. You could also follow Kevin on Instagram at TaskMasterTalks. Kevin, what else you got going on?
I'll be in Dallas at the Comic-Con convention Thursday through Saturday. And like I said earlier, the book from L.A. Taylor, Old School Ring Squared, is still available on Amazon. So check it out.
Great stuff, as always. Kevin, I'd like to thank everybody out there for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks.
Experienced a loss of motivation, energy, or sex drive, or if you're noticing that you're a little softer around the middle than you used to be, it could be your testosterone levels have dropped. By the time men reach the age of 30, in most cases, their T levels have started to decline, and low T can lead to a loss of muscle mass, depression, lack of energy, and a low sex drive. The good news is now you have your remedy with Test X9. This stuff is the real deal, guys. This formula has 9 clinically proven ingredients to naturally boost your body's own testosterone production. experience increases in strength, energy, and sex drive, as well as improved mood and well-being. Feedback has been awesome. Guys in their 30s and 40s have reported waking up with the quote-unquote morning wood for the first time since they were teenagers. If you want to take it to the next level, you can maximize your results with the Ultimate Test Stack, which combines the Test X9 with the T-Assist, an estrogen control and liver support blend, and Recovery PM, an amazing sleep aid that has had incredible feedback for helping people to get the best sleep they've ever had without feeling groggy that next day. You'll be amazed with the effect of raising your T levels and improving your sleep will have on your overall performance and well-being. Don't settle for average. Man up at LegacySupps.com. That is LegacySupps.com. And use the promo code Sullivan for an additional 10% off your entire order. That's LegacySupps.com. And use that promo code Sullivan for 10% off your entire order for the best health and workout supplements out there. This is Pro Wrestler approved.